Ay, that please some, try all, both joy and terror of good and bad that makes and unfolds error, now take upon me, in the name of time, to use my wings. Impute it not a crime to me or my swift passage that I slide o'er 16 years and leave the growth untried of that wide gap, since it is in my power to o'erthrow law and in one self-born hour to plant and o'erwhelm custom. Let me pass the same I am ere ancient order was or what is now received. I witness to the times that brought them in. So shall I do to the freshest things now reigning, and make stale the glistering of this present, as my tale now seems to it. Your patience disallowing, I turn my glass, and give my scene such growing as you had slept between. Leontes leaving, the effects of his fond jealousy so grieving, that he shuts up himself. Imagine me, gentle spectators, that I now may be in fair Bohemia. And remember well, I mentioned a son of the king's, which Florizel I now name to you, and with speed so pace, to speak of Perdita, now grown in grace equal with wondering. What of her ensues, I list not prophesy, but let time's news be known when 'tis brought forth. A shepherd's daughter, and what to her adheres, which follows after, is the argument of time. Of this allow, if ever you have spent time worse ere now, if never, yet the time himself doth say, he wishes earnestly you never may.
I pray thee, good Camillo, be no more importunate. 'Tis a sickness denying thee anything, a death to grant this.
It is 15 years since I saw my country. Though I have for the most part been errant abroad, I desire to lay my bones there. Besides, the penitent king, my master, hath sent for me, to whose feeling sorrows I might be some allay, or I are weaned to think so, which is another spur to my departure.
As thou lovest me, Camillo, wipe not out the rest of thy services by leaving me now. The need I have of thee thine own goodness hath made. Better not to have had thee than thus to want thee. Thou, having made me businesses which none without thee can sufficiently manage, must either stay to execute them thyself, or take away with thee the very services thou hast done, which, if I have not enough considered, as too much I cannot, to be more thankful to thee shall be my study, and my profit therein the heaping friendships. Of that fatal country, Sicilia, prithee, speak no more, whose very naming punishes me with the remembrance of that penitent, as thou callest him, and reconciled king, my brother, whose loss of his most precious queen and children are even now to be afresh lamented. Say to me, when sawest thou the Prince Florizel, my son? Kings are no less unhappy, their issue not being gracious, than they are in losing them, when they have approved their virtues.
Sir, it is 3 days since I saw the prince. What his happier affairs may be are to me unknown, but I have missingly noted he is of late much retired from court and is less frequent to his princely exercises than formerly he hath appeared.
I have considered so much, Camillo, and with some care, so far that I have eyes unto my service which look upon his removedness, from whom I have this intelligence, that he is seldom from the house of a most homely shepherd, a man, they say, that from very nothing, beyond the imagination of his neighbors, is grown into an unspeakable estate.
I have heard, sir, of such a man who hath a daughter of most rare note. The report of her is extended more than can be thought to begin from such a cottage.
That's likewise part of my intelligence. But I fear the angle that plucks our son thither. Thou shalt accompany us to the place where we will, not appearing what we are, have some question with the shepherd, from whose simplicity I think it not uneasy to get the cause of my son's resort thither. Prithee, be my present partner in this business, and lay aside the thoughts of Cecilia.
I willingly obey your command.
My best Camillo, we must disguise ourselves.
When daffodils begin to peer with a hey, the doxy over the dale, why then comes in the sweet of the year. For the red blood rains in the winter's pale. The white sheet bleaching on the hedge with a hey, the sweet birds, oh, how they sing, doth set my pugging tooth on edge. For a quart of ale is a dish for a king. The lark, the tira-lira chants, with a hay, the thrush and the jay, are summer songs for me and my aunts, while we lie tumbling in the hay. I have served Prince Florizel, and in my time wore 3 pile, but now I'm out of service. But shall I go mourn for that, my dear? The pale moon shines by night, and when I wander here and there, I then do most go right. If tinkers may have leave to live and bear the sowskin budget, then my account I may well give, and in the stocks avouch it. My traffic is sheets. When the kite builds, look to lesser linen. My father named me Autolycus, who, being as I am, littered under Mercury, was likewise a snapper-up of unconsidered trifles. With dye and drab I purchased this comparison, and my revenue is the, silly cheat. Gallows and knock are too powerful on the highway. Beating and hanging are terrors to me. For the life to come, I sleep out the thought of it. A prize. A prize!
Let me see. Every 11 weathern tods, every tod yields pound and odd shillings. 1,500 shorn. What comes the wool to?
If the spring holds, the cock's mine.
I cannot do it without counters. Let me see. What am I to buy for our sheep-shearing feast? 3 pounds of sugar, 5 pounds of currants, rice. What will the sister of mine do with rice? But my father hath made her the mistress of the feast, and she lays it on. She hath made me 4 and 20 nosegays for the shearers, 3 mansong men all, and very good ones. They are most of the means and bases, but 1 Puritan amongst them, and he sings psalms to hornpipes. I must have saffron to color the warden pies. Mace? Dates? Oh, none, that's out of my note. Nutmegs? 7? A race or 2 of ginger, but that I may beg. 4 pounds of prunes, and as many of raisins of the sun.
Oh, that ever I was born!
Oh, in the name of me!
Oh, help me! Help me! Pluck but off these rags, and then death! Death!
Oh, alack, poor soul, thou hast need of more rags to lay on thee rather than have these off!
Oh, sir, the loathsomeness of them offends me more than the stripes I have received, which are mighty ones and millions.
Oh, alas, poor man! 1,000,000 of beating may come to a great matter.
I am robbed, sir, and beaten. My money and apparel taken from me, and these detestable things put upon me.
What, by a horseman or a footman?
A footman. Sweet sir, a footman.
Well, indeed, he should be a footman by the garments he hath left with thee. If this be a horseman's coat, it hath seen very hot service. Here, lend me thy hand, I'll help thee. Come, lend me thy hand.
Oh, good, sir, tenderly. Oh.
Oh, alas, poor soul.
Oh, good sir, softly. Good sir, I fear, sir, my shoulder blade is out.
Oh, how now? Can't stand?
Softly. Dear sir, good sir, softly. You have done me a charitable office.
Dost lack any money? I have a little money for thee.
No! Good. Sweet sir, no, I beseech you, sir. I have a kinsman not past 3/4 of a mile hence unto whom I was going. I shall there have money, or anything I want. Offer me no money, I pray you. That kills my heart.
What manner of fellow was he that robbed you?
A fellow, sir, that I have known to go about with trawl, my dames. I knew him once, a servant of the prince. I cannot tell, good sir, for which of his virtues it was, but he was certainly whipped out of the court.
No, his vices, you would say. There's no virtue whipped out of the court. They cherish it to make it stay there, and yet it will no more but abide.
Vices, I would say, sir. I know this man well. He hath been since an ape-bearer, then a process server, a bailiff. Then he compassed a motion of the prodigal son, and married a tinker's wife within a mile of where my land and living lies. And having flown over many knavish professions, he settled only in rogue. Some call him Autolycus.
Oh, out upon him! Prig! For my life, prig! He haunts wakes and fairs and bear-baiting.
Very true, sir. That's the rogue that put me into this apparel.
No more cowardly rogue in all Bohemia. If you had but looked big and spit at him, he'd have run.
I must confess to you, sir, I am no fighter. I am false of heart that way, and that he knew, I warrant him.
How do you now?
Sweet sir, much better than I was. I can stand and walk. I will even take my leave of you and pace softly towards my kinsmen.
Shall I bring thee on the way?
No! Good-faced, sir, no. Sweet sir.
Then fare thee well. I must go buy spices for our sheep-shearing.
Prosper you, sweet sir. Your purse is not hot enough to purchase your spice. I'll be with you at your sheep-shearing, too. If I make not this sheep bring out another, and the shearers prove sheep, let me be unrolled and my name put in the book of virtue. Jog on, the foot pathway, and merrily hent the styla. A merry heart goes all the day, your satire's in a Myra.
These your unusual weeds to each part of you do give a life. No shepherdess, but Flora, peering in April's front. This, your sheep-shearing, is a meeting of the petty gods, and you, the queen aunt.
Sir, my gracious lord, to chide at your extremes it not becomes me. Oh, pardon that I name them. Your high self, the gracious mark of the land, you have obscured with a swain's wearing, and me, poor lowly maid, most goddess-like, pranked up. But that our feasts in every mess have folly, and the feeders digest it with a custom, I should blush to see you so attired. Swoon, I think, to show myself a glass.
I bless the time when my good falcon made her flight across thy father's ground.
Now Jove afford you cause. To me the difference forges dread. Your greatness hath not been used to fear. Even now I tremble to think your father, by some accident, should pass this way as you did. Oh, the fates! How would he look to see his work so noble, vilely bound up? What would he say? Or how should I, in these my borrowed flaunts, behold the sternness of his presence?
Apprehend nothing but jollity. The gods themselves, humbling their deities to love, have taken the shapes of beasts upon them. Jupiter became a bull and bellowed. The green Neptune a ram and bleated. And the fire-robed god, golden Apollo, a poor humble swain, as I seem now. Their transformations were never for a piece of beauty rare, nor in a way so chaste, since my desires run not before mine honor, nor my lusts burn hotter than my faith.
Oh, but, sir, your resolution cannot hold when 'tis opposed, as it must be, by the power of the king. One of these two must be necessities. Which then will speak? That you must change this purpose, or I my life.
Thou dearest Perdita, with these forced thoughts, I prithee, darken not the mirth of the feast. Or I'll be thine, my fair, or not my father's, for I cannot be my own, nor anything to any, if I be not thine. To this I am most constant, though destiny say no. Be merry, gentle. Strangle such thoughts as these with anything that you behold the while. Your guests are coming. Lift up your countenance, as it were the day of celebration of that nuptial which we two have sworn shall come.
Oh, Lady Fortune, stand you auspicious.
See your guests approach. Address yourself to entertain them sprightly, and let's be red with mirth.
Fie, daughter! When my old wife lived, upon this day she was both pantler, butler, cook, both dame and servant, welcomed all, served all, would sing her song and dance her tune, now here at upper end of table, now the middle on his shoulder, and his or her face afire with labor, and the thing she took to quench it, she would to each one sip. You are retired, as if you were a feasted one, and not the hostess of the meeting. Pray you, bid these unknown friends to us welcome, for it is a way to make us better friends, more known. Come, quench your blushes and present yourself, that which you are, mistress of the feast. Come on and bid us welcome to your sheep shearing, as your good flock shall prosper.
Sir, welcome. It is my father's will I should take on me the hostess-ship of the day. You're welcome, sir. Give me those flowers there, Dorcas. Mm-hmm. Reverend sirs, for you there's rosemary and rue. These keep seeming and savor all winter long. Grace and remembrance be to you both, and welcome to our shearing.
Shepherdess, a fair one are you. Well, you fit our ages with flowers of winter.
Sir, the year growing ancient, not yet on summer's death, nor on the birth of trembling winter. The fairest flowers of the season are our carnations and streaked gillivers, which some would call nature's bastards. Of that kind are rustic gardens barren, and I care not to get slips of them.
Wherefore, gentle maiden, do you neglect them?
For I have heard it said there is an art which in their piedness shares with great creating nature.
Say there be. Yet nature is made better by no mean, but nature makes that mean. So, over that art which you say adds to nature, is an art that nature makes. You see, sweet maid, we marry a gentler scion to the wildest stock, and make conceive a bark of baser kind by bud of nobler race. This is an art which does mend nature, change it rather, but the art itself is nature.
So it is.
Then make your garden rich in gillivers, and do not call them bastards.
I'll not put the dibble in earth to set one slip of them. No more than were I painted would I wish this youth should say, 'twere well, and only therefore desire to breed by me. Here's flowers for you. Hot lavender, mint, savory, marjoram. The marigold that goes to bed with the sun, and with him rises weeping. These are flowers of middle summer, and I think they are given to men of middle age. You're very welcome.
I should leave grazing, were I of your flock, and only live by gazing.
Out, alas! You'd be so lean that blasts of January would blow you through and through. Now, my fairest friend, I would I had some flowers of the spring that might become your time of day. And yours, that wear upon your virgin branches, yet your maidenhead's growing. Oh, Proserpina, for the flowers now that frighted, thou lettest fall from Dis's wagon. Daffodils that come before the swallow dares, and take the winds of March with beauty. Violets dim, but sweeter than the lids of Juno's eyes or Cytherea's breath. Pale primroses that die unmarried, ere they can behold bright Phoebus in his strength, a malady most incident to maids. Bold oxlips and the crown imperial, lilies of all kinds, the fleur-de-luce being one. Oh, these I lack to make you garlands of, and my sweet friend to strew him o'er and o'er.
What, like a course?
No, like a bank for love to lie and play on, not like a course. Or if, not to be buried, but quick and in mine arms. Come, take your flowers. Methinks I play as I have seen them do in wits and pastorals. Sure, this robe of mine does change my disposition.
What you do still betters what is done. When you speak sweet, I'd have you do it ever. When you sing, I'd have you buy and sell so. So give alms, pray so. And for the ordering of your affairs, to sing them too. When you do dance, I wish you a wave of the sea, that you might ever do nothing but that. Move still, still so, and own no other function. Each your doing, so singular in each particular, crowns what you are doing in the present deed, that all your acts are queens.
Oh, Doricles, your praises are too large, but that your youth and the true blood which peeps fairly through it do plainly give you out an unstained shepherd. With wisdom I might fear, my Doricles, you wooed me the false way.
I think you have as little skill to fear as I have purpose to put you to it. But come, our dance, I pray. Your hand, my Perdita. So turtles pair that never mean to part.
I'll swear for him.
This is the prettiest low-born lass that ever ran on the greensward. Nothing she does or seems but smacks of something greater than herself. Too noble for this place.
He tells her something that makes her blood look out. Good sooth, she is the queen of curds and cream.
Come on, strike up!
Mopsa must be your mistress. Marry garlic to mend her kissing with.
Now in good time.
Not a word, a word. We stand upon our manners. Come, strike up!
Pray, good shepherd, what fair swain is this which dances with your daughter?
They call him Doricles, and boasts himself to have a worthy feeding. But I have it upon his own report, and I believe it. He looks like sooth. He says he loves my daughter. I think so, too, for never gazed the moon upon the water, as he'll stand and read, as 'twere, my daughter's eyes. And to be plain, I think there is not half a kiss to choose who loves another best.
She dances featly.
So she does anything, though I report it that should be silent. If young Doricles do light upon her, she shall bring him that which he not dreams of.
Oh, master, if you did but hear the peddler at the door, you would never dance again after a tabor and pipe. No, the bagpipe could not move you. He sings several tunes faster than you'll tell money. He utters them as he had eaten ballads, and all men's ears grew to his tune.
He never could have come better. He shall come in. I love a ballad, but even too well. If it be a doleful matter, merrily set down, or a very pleasant thing indeed, and sung lamentably.
He hath songs for man or woman of all sizes. No milliner can so fit his customers with gloves. He has the prettiest love songs for maids, so without bawdry, which is strange, with such delicate burdens of dildos and fadings, jumper and thumper. And where some stretch-mouth rascal would, as it were, mean mischief and break a foul gap into the matter, he makes the maid to answer, whoop, do me no harm, good man. Puts him off, slights him with, whoop, do me no harm, good man.
This is a brave fellow.
Believe me, thou talkest of an admirable conceited fellow. Has he any unbraided wares?
He hath ribbons of all the colours in the rainbow. Points more than all the lawyers in Bohemia can learnedly handle, though they come to him by the gross. Inkles, caddises, cambrics, lawns. Why, he sings them over as they were gods or goddesses. You would think a smock were a she-angel. He so chanced to the sleeve-hand in the work about a square-aunt.
Prithee, bring him in, and let him approach singing.
Forewarn him that he use no scurrilous words in tunes. Mm-hmm.
You have of these peddlers that hath more in them than you'd think, sister.
Aye, good brother, or go about to think.
Lawn as white as driven snow, cypress black as e'er was crow, gloves as sweet as damask roses, mask for faces and for noses. Bugle, bracelet, necklace, amber, perfume for a lady's chamber. Golden coifs and stomachers for my lads to give their dears. Pins and poking sticks of steel, what maids lack from head to heel. Come buy of me, come. Come buy, come buy. Buy, lads, or else your lasses cry. Come buy.
If I were not in love with Mopsa, thou shouldst take no money of me. But being enthralled as I am, it will also be the bondage of certain ribbons and gloves.
I would promise them against the feast, but they come not too late now.
He hath promised you more than that, or there be liars.
He hath paid you all he promised you. Maybe he hath paid you more, which will shame you to give him again.
Is there no manners left among maids? Will they wear their plackets where they should bear their faces? Is there not milking time when you are going to bed or kiln-hole or to whistle off these secrets, but you must be tittle-tattling before all our guests? 'Tis well they are whispering. Clamor your tongues. Not a word more.
I have done. Come, you promised me a tawdry lathe and a pair of sweet gloves.
Have I not told thee how I was cousined by the way and lost all my money?
And indeed, sir, there are cousiners abroad. Therefore it behooves men to be wary.
Fear not, thou man. Thou shalt lose nothing here.
I hope so, sir, for I have about me many parcels of charge.
What hast thou there? Ballads?
Right now, by thumb. I love a ballad in print of life, for then we are through there, true.
Here's one to a very doleful tune. How a usurer's wife was brought to bed of 20 money bags at a burden, and how she longed to eat adder's heads and toad's carbonado.
Is it true, think you?
Very true, and but a month old.
Bless me for marrying a usurer.
Here's the midwife's name to it, one Mistress Tailporter, and 5 or 6 honest wives that were present. Huh. Why should I carry lies abroad?
Pray you now, buy it.
Come now, and lay it by. Let's first see more ballads. We'll buy other things anon.
Here's another ballad of a fish that appeared upon the coast on Wednesday, the 4 score of April, 40,000 fathom above water, and sung this ballad against the hard hearts of maids. It was thought she was a woman and was turned into a cold fish, for she would not exchange flesh with one that loved her. The ballad is very pitiful and as true.
Is it true, too? Think you?
5 justices' hands to it, and witnesses more than my pack will hold.
Lay it by, too. Another.
This is a very merry ballad, but a very pretty one.
Let's have the merry ones.
Why, this is a passing merry one and goes to the tune of 2 maids wooing a man. There's scarce a maid westward, but she sings it. 'Tis in request, I can tell you.
We can both sing it. If thou'lt bear a part, thou shalt hear. 'Tis in 3 parts.
We had the tune, aunt, a month ago.
I can bear my part. You must know 'tis my occupation. Have at it with you. Get you hence, for I must go where it fits not you to know.
Whither?
Oh, whither?
Whither?
It becomes thy oath full well, thou to me thy secret tell.
And me too, let me go thither, if thou goest to grange or mill, if to either thou dost ill.
Neither.
What neither?
Neither.
Thou hast sworn thy love to me.
Thou hast sworn it more to me than whither goest they whither.
We'll have this song out anon by ourselves. My father and the gentleman are in sad talk, and we'll not trouble them. Come, bring away thy pack after me. Wenches, I'll buy for you both. Peddler, let's have the first choice. Follow me, girls.
And you shall pay well for them. Will you buy any tape or lace for your cape, my dainty duck, my deara? Any silk, any thread, any toys for your head of the newest and finest, finest wearer? Come to the peddler, money's a meddler that doth utter all men's wearer.
Master, there is 3 carters, 3 shepherds, 3 neat herds, 3 swine herds that have made themselves all men of hair. They call themselves soldiers, and they have a dance which the wenches say is a gallimaufry of gambols because they are not int. But they themselves are of the mind, if it be not too rough for some that know little but bowling, it will please plentifully.
Away, will none on it. Here has been much homely foolery already. I know, sir, we weary you.
You weary those that refresh us. Pray, let's see these 4 threes of herdsmen.
1 3 of them, by their own report, sir, hath danced before the king. And not the worst of the 3, but jumps 12 foot and a half by the square.
Leave your prating. Since these good men are pleased, let them come in. But quickly now.
Why, they stay at door, sir.
Oh, father, you'll know more of that hereafter.
Is it not too far gone? It is time to part them. He's simple and tells much.
How now, fair shepherd? Your heart is full of something that does take your mind from feasting. Sooth, when I was young and handed love, as you do, I was wont to load my she with knacks. I would have ransacked the peddler's silken treasury and have poured it to her acceptance. You have let him go, and nothing martyred with him. If your lass interpretation should abuse, and call this your lack of love or bounty, You were straight at for a reply, at least if you make a care of happy holding her.
Old sir, I know she prizes not such trifles as these are. The gifts she looks from me are packed and locked up in my heart, which I have given already, but not delivered. Oh, hear me breathe my life before this ancient sir, who, it should seem, hath sometime loved. I take thy hand, this hand, as soft as dove's down, and as white as it. Or the Ethiopian's tooth, or the fan snow that's bolted by the northern blasts twice o'er.
What follows this? How prettily the young swain seems to wash the hand was fair before. I have put you out. But to your protestation, let me hear what you profess.
Do and be witness to it.
And this, my neighbor, too?
And he, and more than he, and men, the earth, the heavens and all, that were I crowned the most imperial monarch, thereof most worthy, were I the fairest youth that ever made eye swerve, had force and knowledge more than was ever man's, I would not prize them without her love. For her, employ them all, commend them and condemn them to her service, or to their own perdition.
Fairly offered.
This shows a sound affection.
But my daughter, say you the like to him?
I cannot speak so well, nothing so well, no, nor mean better. By the pattern of mine own thoughts, I cut out the purity of his.
Take hands, a bargain, and friends unknown, you shall bear witness to it. I give my daughter to him, and will make her portion equal his.
Oh, that must be in the virtue of your daughter. One being dead, I shall have more than you can dream of yet. Enough, then, for your wonder. But come on, contract us before these witnesses.
Come, your hand! And daughter, yours.
Soft, swain, a while, beseech you. Have you a father?
I have, but what of him?
Knows he of this?
He neither does nor shall.
Methinks a father is at the nuptial of his son, a guest that best becomes the table. Pray you once more, is not your father grown incapable of reasonable affairs? Is he not stupid with age and altering rooms? Can he speak here, know man from man, dispute his own estate? Lies he not bedrid, and again does nothing but what he did being childish?
No, good sir. He has his health, and ampler strength indeed than most have of his age.
By my white beard, you offer him, if this be so, a wrong, something unfilial. Reason my son should choose himself a wife. But as good reason, the father, all whose joy is nothing else but fair posterity, should hold some counsel in such a business.
I yield all this, but for some other reasons, my grave sir, which 'tis not fit you know, I not acquaint my father of this business.
Let him know it.
He shall not.
Prithee, let him.
No, he must not.
Let him, son. He shall not need to grieve at knowing of thy choice.
Come, come, he must not. Mark our contract.
Mark your divorce, young sir. Whom son I dare not call, thou art too base to be acknowledged. Thou, a scepter's heir that thus affects a sheephook. Thou, old traitor, I am sorry that by hanging thee I can but shorten thy life 1 week. And thou, fresh piece of excellent witchcraft, who of force must know the royal fool thou copest with.
Oh, my heart.
I'll have thy beauty scratched with briars, and made more homely than thy state. For thee, fond boy, if I may ever know, thou dost but sigh, that thou no more shalt see this knack, as never, I mean, thou shalt, will bar thee from succession. Not hold thee of our blood, no, not our kin, far than Deucalion off. Mark thou my words. Follow us to the court. Thou, churl, for this time, though full of our displeasure, yet we free thee from the dead blow of it. And you, enchantment, worthy enough a herdsman, yea, him too that makes himself, but for our honor therein, unworthy thee, if ever henceforth thou these rural latches to his entrance open, or hoop his body more with thy embraces, I will devise a death as cruel for thee as thou art tender to it.
Even here undone, I was not much afeard, for once or twice I was about to speak and tell him plainly the selfsame sun that shines upon his court hides not his visage from our cottage, but looks on alike. Wilt please you, sir, be gone. I told you what would come of this. Beseech you, of your own state, take care. This dream of mine, being now awake, I'll queen it no inch farther, but milk my ewes and weep.
Why, how now, father? Speak ere thou diest.
I cannot speak, nor think, nor dare to know that which I know. Oh, sir, you have undone a man of 83 that thought to fill his grave in quiet, yea, to die upon the bed my father died, to lie close by his honest bones. But now some hangman must put on my shroud and lay me where no priest shuffles in dust. Oh, cursed wretch, that knewest this was the prince and wouldst adventure to mingle faith with him. Undone, undone! If I might die within this hour, I have lived to die when I desire.
Why look you so upon me? I am but sorry, not afeard. Delayed, but nothing altered. What I was, I am. More straining on for plucking back, not following my leash unwillingly.
Gracious my lord, you know your father's temper. At this time he will allow no speech, which I do guess you do not purpose to him, and as hardly will he endure your sight as yet, I fear. Then till the fury of his highness settled, come not before him.
I not purpose it. I think, Camillo?
Even he, my lord.
How often have I told you 'twould be thus? How often said my dignity would last but till 'twere known?
It cannot fail but by the violation of my faith, and then let nature crush the sides of the earth together and mar the seeds within. Lift up thy looks. For my succession, wait me, father. I am heir to my affection.
Be advised.
I am, and by my fancy. If my reason will thereto be obedient, I have reason. If not, my senses, better pleased with madness, do bid it welcome.
This is desperate, sir.
So call it. But it does fulfill my vow. I needs must think it honesty. Camillo, not for Bohemia, nor the pomp that may be thereat gleaned, for all the sun seas, or the close earth wombs, or the profound sea hides and unknown fathoms, will I break my oath to this my fair beloved. Therefore I pray you, as you have ever been my father's honored friend, when he shall miss me, as in faith I mean not to see him any more, cast your good counsels upon his passion. Let myself and fortune tug for the time to come. This you may know, and so deliver. I am put to sea, with her whom here I cannot hold on shore, and most opportune to our need, I have a vessel rides fast by, but not prepared for this design. What course I mean to hold shall nothing benefit your knowledge, nor concern me the reporting.
Oh, my lord, I would your spirit were easier for advice, or stronger for your need.
Hark, Perdita, I'll hear you by and by.
He's irremovable, resolved for flight. Now were I happy, if his going I could frame to serve my turn, save him from danger, do him love and honor, purchase the sight again of dear Cecilia, and that unhappy king, my master, whom I so much thirst to see.
Now, good Camillo, I am so fraught with curious business that I leave out ceremony.
Sir, I think you have heard of my poor services in the love that I have borne your father.
Very nobly have you deserved. It is my father's music to speak your deeds, not little of his care, to have them recompensed as thought on.
Well, my lord, if you may please to think I love the king, and through him what is nearest to him, which is your gracious self, embrace but my direction, if your more ponderous and settled project may suffer alteration. On mine honor, I'll point you where you shall have such receiving as shall become your highness, where you may enjoy your mistress, from whom I see there's no disjunction to be made, but by, as heavens forfend, your ruin. Marry her, and with my best endeavors in your absence, your discontenting father strive to qualify and bring him up to liking.
How, Camillo, may this almost a miracle be done, that I may call thee something more than man, and after that to trust to thee?
Have you thought on a place whereto you'll go?
Not any yet. But as the unthought-on accident is guilty to what we wildly do, so we profess ourselves to be the slaves of chance and flies of every wind that blows.
Then list to me. This follows. If you will not change your purpose, but undergo this flight, make for Cecilia, and there present yourself and your fair princess, for so I see she must be for Leontes. She shall be habited as it becomes the partner of your bed. Methinks I see Leontes opening his free arms and weeping his welcomes forth, asks thee there, son, forgiveness, as 'twere in the father's person, kisses the hands of your fresh princess, o'er and o'er divides him twixt his unkindness and his kindness, the one he chides to hell and bids the other grow faster than thought or time.
Worthy Camillo, what color for my visitation shall I hold up before him?
Sent by the king, your father, to greet him and to give him comforts. Sir, the manner of your bearing towards him, with what you, as from your father, shall deliver, things known betwixt us three, I'll write you down. The which shall point you forth at every sitting what you must say, that he shall not perceive, but that you have your father's bosom there, and speak his very heart.
I am bound to you. There is some sap in this.
A cause more promising than a wild dedication of yourselves to unpathed waters, undreamed shores, most certain to miseries enough. No hope to help you, but as you shake off one to take another. Nothing so certain as your anchors, who do their best office if they but stay you, where you'll be loath to be. Besides, you know prosperity's the very bond of love, whose fresh complexion and whose heart together affliction alters.
One of these is true. I think affliction may subdue the cheek, but not take in the mind.
Yea, say you so. There shall not at your father's house these 7 years be born another such.
My good Camillo, she is as forward of her breeding as she is in the rear our birth.
I cannot say 'tis pity she lacks instructions, for she seems a mistress to most that teach.
Your pardon, sir. For this I'll blush you thanks.
My prettiest Perdita. But oh, the thorns we stand upon. Camillo, preserver of my father, now of me, the medicine of our house, how shall we do? We're not furnished like Bohemia's son, nor shall appear in Sicilia.
My lord, fear none of this. I think you know my fortunes do all lie there. It shall be so my care to have you royally appointed, as if the scene you play were mine. For instance, sir, that you may know you shall not want one word.
What a fool honesty is! And trust his sworn brother, a very simple gentleman. I have sold all my trumpery. Not a counterfeit stone, not a ribbon, glass, pomander, brooch, table book, ballad, knife, tape, glove, shoe tie, bracelet, horn ring to keep my pack from fasting. They throng who should buy first, as if my trinkets had been hallowed and brought a benediction to the buyer. By which means I saw whose purse was best in picture, and what I saw to my good use I remembered. My clown, who wants but something to be a reasonable man, grew so in love with the wench's song that he would not stir his petitos till he had both tune and words, which so drew the rest of the herd to me that all their other senses stuck in ears. You might have pinched a placket, it was senseless. 'Twas nothing to geld a codpiece of a purse. I could have filed keys off that hung in chains. No hearing, no feeling, but my sir's song and admiring the nothing of it. So that in this time of lethargy, I picked and cut most of their festival purses, and had not the old man come in with a hubbub against his daughter and the king's son, and scared my choughs from the chaff, I had not left a purse alive in the whole army.
Nay, but my letters, by this means being there so soon as you arrive, shall clear that doubt.
And those that you'll procure from King Leontes
shall satisfy your father.
Happy be you. All that you speak shows fair.
Who have we here? We'll make an instrument of this. Omit nothing may give us aid.
If they have overheard me now, why, hanging!
How now, good fellow? Why shakest thou so? Fear not, man. Here's no harm intended to thee.
I am a poor fellow, sir.
Why, be so still. Here's nobody will steal that from thee. Yet, for the outside of thy poverty, we must make an exchange. Therefore, discase thee instantly. Thou must think there's a necessity in it, and change garments with this gentleman. Though the pennyworth on his side be the worst, yet hold thee, there's some boot.
I am a poor fellow, sir. I know ye well enough.
Nay, prithee, dispatch. The gentleman is half flayed already.
Are you in earnest, sir? I smell the trick on it.
Dispatch, I prithee.
Indeed, I have had earnest, but I cannot with conscience take it.
Unbuckle, unbuckle! Fortunate mistress, let my prophecy come home to ye. You must retire yourself into some covert. Take your sweetheart's hat and pluck it over your brows. Muffle your face. Dismantle you, and as you can, dislike the truth of your own seeming, that you may, for I do fear eyes over, to shipboard get undescried.
I see the play so lies that I must bear a part.
No remedy. Have you done there?
Should I now meet my father, he would not call me son.
Nay, you shall have no hat. Come, lady, come. Farewell, my friend.
Adieu, sir.
Oh, Perdita, what have we twain forgot? Pray you a word.
What I do next shall be to tell the king of this escape and whither they are bound, wherein my hope is I shall so prevail to force him after, in whose company I shall review Cecilia, for whose sight I have a woman's longing.
Fortune speed us. Thus we set on, Camillo, to the seaside.
The swifter speed, the better.
I understand the business. I hear it. To have an open ear, a quick eye, and a nimble hand is necessary for a cutpurse. A good nose is requisite also, to smell out the work of the other senses. I see that this is the time the unjust man doth thrive. What an exchange this had been without boot! What a boot is here with this exchange! Sure, the gods this year connive at us, and we may do anything extempore! The prince himself is about a piece of iniquity, stealing away from his father with his clog at his heels. If I thought it were a piece of honesty to acquaint the king withal, I would not do it. I hold it the more knavery to conceal it, and therein am I constant to my profession. Aside, here's more matter for a hot brain. Every lane's end, every shop, church, session, hanging, yields a careful man work.
See what a man you are now. There is no other way but to tell the king she's a changeling and none of your flesh and blood.
Nay, but hear me. Oh, go to, then.
She being none of your flesh and blood has not offended the king. And so your flesh and blood is not to be punished by him. Show those things you found about her, those secret things. All but what she has with her. This being done, let the law go whistle, I'll warrant you.
I will tell the king all, every word, yea, and his son's pranks too, who, I may say, is no honest man, neither to his father nor to me, to go about to make me the king's brother-in-law.
Indeed, brother-in-law was the farthest off you could have been to him, and then your blood had been the dearer by I know not how much an ounce.
Very wisely, puppies.
Well, let us to the king. There is that in this fardel will make him scratch his beard.
I know not what impediment this complaint may be to the flight of my master.
Pray heartily he be at palace.
Though I am not naturally honest, I am so sometimes by chance. Let me pocket up my peddler's excrement. How now, rustics, whither are you bound?
To the palace, and it like your worship.
Your affairs there? What? With whom? The condition of that fardel, the place of your dwelling, your names, your ages, of what having, breeding, and anything that is fitting to be known, discover.
We are but plain fellows, sir.
A lie. You are rough and hairy. Let me have no lying, it becomes none but tradesmen, and they often give us soldiers the lie. But we pay them for it with stamped coin, not stabbing steel. Therefore they do not give us the lie.
Your worship had like to have given us one, if you had not taken yourself with the matter.
Are you a courtier in it like you, sir?
Whether it like me or no, I am a courtier. Seest thou not the air of the court in these enfoldings? Hath not my gait in it the measure of the court? Receives not thy nose court odor from me? Reflect I not that baseness court contempt? Thinkest thou, for that I insinuate or tose from thee thy business, I am therefore no courtier? I am courtier cap a pay, and one that will either push on or pluck back thy business there, whereupon I command thee to open thy affair.
My business, sir, is to the king.
What advocate hast thou to him?
I know not, and it like you.
Advocate's the court word for a pheasant. Say you have none.
None, sir. I have no pheasant, cock or hen.
How blessed are we that are not simple men. Yet nature might have made me as these are. Therefore I will not disdain.
This cannot be but a great courtier.
His garments are rich, but he wears them not handsomely.
He seems to be the more noble in being fantastical. A great man, I'll warrant. I know by the picking on his teeth.
The fardel there. What's in the fardel? Wherefore that box?
Sir, there lies such secrets in this fardel and box, which none must know but the king, and which he shall know within this hour, if I may come to the speech of him.
Age, thou hast lost thy labor.
Why, sir?
The king is not at the palace. He has gone aboard a new ship to purge melancholy and air himself. For, if thou beest capable of things serious, thou must know the king is full of grief.
So 'tis said, sir, about his son that should have married a shepherd's daughter.
If that shepherd be not in hand fast, let him fly. The curses he shall have, the tortures he shall feel, will break the back of men, the heart of monster.
Ooh, think you so, sir?
Oh, not a he alone shall suffer what wit can make heavy and vengeance bitter. But those that are germane to him, though removed 50 times, shall all come under the hangman. Which, though it be a great pity, yet it is necessary. An old sheep-whistling rogue, a ram-tender, to offer to have his daughter come into grace. Some say he shall be stoned, but that death is too soft for him. Say I, draw our throne into a sheep-coat. All deaths are too few, the sharpest too easy.
Has the old man e'er a son, sir, do you hear, and like you?
He has a son who shall be flayed alive, then anointed over with honey, set on the head of a wasp's nest, then stand till he be 3/4 and a dram dead, then recovered again with aqua vitae or some other hot infusion, then raw as he is, and in the hottest day prognostication proclaims, shall be set against a brick wall, the sun looking with a southward eye upon him, where he is to behold him with flies blown to death. But what talk we of these traitorly rascals, whose miseries are to be smiled at, their offenses being so capital? Tell me, for you seem to be honest, plain men, what have you to the king? Being something gently considered, I'll bring you where he is aboard, tender your persons to his presence, whisper him in your behalfs, and if it be a man besides the king to effect your suits, here is a man shall do it.
He seems to be of great authority. Close with him, give him gold. Although authority be a stubborn bear, yet he is oft led by the nose with gold. Show the inside of your purse to the outside of his hand, and no more ado. Remember, stoned, flayed alive.
Please you, sir, to undertake the business for us, here is that gold I have. I'll make it as much more, and leave this young man in pawn till I bring it you.
After I have done what I promised?
Aye, sir.
Well, give me the moiety. Are you a party in this business?
In some sort, sir, but though my case be a pitiful one, I hope I shall not be flayed out of it.
Oh, that is the case of the shepherd's son. Hang him. He'll be made an example.
Oh, comfort, comfort, good comfort. We must to the king and show our strange sights. He must know 'tis none of your daughter nor my sister. We are gone else. Sir, I will give you as much as this old man does when our business is performed, and remain, as he says, your pawn till it be brought you.
I will trust you. Walk before toward the seaside. Go on the right hand. I will but look upon the hedge and follow you.
We are blessed in this man, as I may say, even blessed.
Let's before as he bids us. He was provided to do us good.
If I had a mind to be honest, I see fortune would not suffer me. She drops booties in my mouth. I am courted now with a double occasion, gold and a means to do the prince my master good, which who knows how that may turn back to my advancement. I will bring these 2 moles, these blind ones, aboard him. If he think it fit to shore them again, and that the complaint they have to the king concerns him nothing, let him call me rogue for being so far officious, for I am proof against that title, and what shame else belongs to it. To him I will present them. There may be matter in it.